Okay, I was going to put one of those psychedelic little twisty hypnosis things up here, but I didn't want to deal with somebody, you know, getting an epileptic seizure or something from that. What's happened here, why we're doing this topic tonight, about a month ago, we have a preacher's fellowship. About every 2 to 3 months, we get together, like-minded pastors, and just support one another, encourage one another. Pastor Gary's been doing this for forever. So the last time we did it, it was kind of a last minute thing. It got handed to me to lead our thought discussion, if you will. And so, this is where I was at the time. And so this is the information I had. What happened, just to kind of lead into this, I've been curious for some time about hypnosis. No specific reason, just why are you curious about what doves taste like, you know, or deer or whatever, you know? It's just something that was of interest, you know. And so I actually found this college in California. You'll learn a little bit about it. They had a free online course, so I got a certificate in hypnosis, elementary hypnosis, you know. So woo, I'm official. I went through the program just to see what it's like. Now, at this point, let me throw out this disclaimer. Attention, attention. I am not in favor of hypnosis or hypnotherapy. All right, let's clarify that. I am not taking the course to become a hypnotherapist, whatever you call it. It's seeking understanding of what's going on. That's what I wanted to know. What are they teaching? How are they teaching this? What methodologies are they using? And here's why. Everything I ever read from a supposed Christian perspective says this: hypnosis comes from the occult, therefore it's bad. Now, here's 200 more pages of me saying the exact same thing. It came out of the occult, therefore it's bad. Stay away from it. Okay, you've told me nothing about the philosophy of hypnosis, the ideologies of hypnosis, the methods that they use. That's what I want to know about. That's what I'm curious about. How does this thing work? It's kind of like handing a mechanic an engine and saying, this came out of the occult, don't touch it. No, I got to pull it apart piece by piece and figure out what's in there. How does it work? Not for, again, the purpose of practicing hypnosis, but what's going on? Through that study, it was very interesting in this regard. I came to learn that hypnosis is now woven throughout our society, and you guys don't even know it. We've got a number of people in the medical community. How many of you people have been trained in, have heard throughout the medical community using visualization techniques to deal with pain, to deal with fears? Doctors are promoting this. How many of you have been to a dentist and seen in the office that they will use hypnotherapy to help you with the discomfort of dental work? So it's there, it's in our society, and it's not always being labeled as hypnosis or hypnotherapy. So this is why it's of interest to me, and this is why I took the course, why I went through the program. It was, again, just learning. It was for the purpose of gaining knowledge and understanding about something I knew nothing about. So that being said, some of you have been through the bulk of this. Sorry about that, but we're going back through it again. So, that being said, we're going to look at hypnosis, and it is different, and you're going to see some of the dangers. To start with, let's look at a brief history, because everything, like I said, when I read Christian critiques of hypnosis, it is kind of that knee-jerk default, it's out of the occult, it's bad, leave it alone, run from it. There it is. I want more information. I want the details. So what about the history? Well, as you look at this brief history here, you can see that hypnosis does not, there is an aspect of hypnosis that comes not from the occult. So back in 1774, a guy named Franz Mesmer, you guys are familiar, most of you, with the term mesmerize. Okay, this is the guy that coined that term. He had a special power, if you will, a magnetic attraction of other people, so he could mesmerize you. That's what it came to be called. He was influential. He could come up to a total stranger, and there was something about him that was, I don't know if you want to call it charismatic enough or whatever the term is. He just had a way of meeting somebody and influencing them. It's nothing mystical or magical. You guys are that way. Dan Anderson never met a stranger in his life. See somebody from Mars, and he'll just walk right up and don't mind the fact that they're purple. He just walks up, hey, how you doing? And just starts a conversation, and it's like they're friends, you know? So there are people like that. Then you got people like me who, here's a Martian, he's purple, great, more power to you, but our lives don't cross. So if they do, I'll speak to you. So we got people all across the spectrum like that. There's nothing magical going on here with Mr. Mesmer back in 1774. He just had this way of working with people, and he could sway them with his suggestions to his view or whatever it was. So his so-called superpower, if you will, came to be labeled mesmerize or mesmerism. All right, fast forward a little while, 1849, doctor comes along, Dr. James Braid. All right, he was a Scottish surgeon. All right, now let me ask you something. What is so occultic about a medical surgeon in Scotland? So that's my response when I read so-called Christian critics who are coming to something and saying, it's out of the occult, run, flee, danger, danger. It's a knee-jerk reaction. Deal with the subject matter at hand. Tell me what's going on. That's what I want to know. So James Braid, a medical doctor, not convinced of mesmerism and this whole idea, so he starts studying this and looking at it. And actually what he did was he took a bottle of wine and he put it in front of somebody and sat them in a chair and he just sat there and observed them. What's going on here? Didn't say a word. And eventually the person sitting in the chair looking at the bottle of wine couldn't look anywhere else, just, you know, dozing off, going to sleep. So Braid comes up with the idea, this isn't superpower, this isn't mesmerism, this is sleep. When people go into a so-called mesmeristic state, what you and I would identify as a hypnotic state, they're on the verge of falling asleep. All right, so that's what he observed. So he changed the term from mesmerism to hypnosis. Hypnosis comes from a Greek word that means sleep. All right. Now, these are not occultic people who are launching the concept of what we know today as hypnosis. They're not occultic doctors who are observing this practice and this phenomenon. They're real live people. All right. And there's validity to them. These are intelligent people. All right, from 1849, fast forward to 1968. Woo! Grand old time, right? Along in the world of hypnosis comes a guy out in California, Dr. John Kappas. All right? Dr. Kappas literally defined the profession of hypnotherapy in 1973. And this is how he did it. He wrote and defined the profession of a hypnotherapist to the Federal Dictionary of Occupational Titles. And that definition still holds true today. It has not been changed one bit. So from 1973, the government there in Washington, D.C. views hypnotherapy and hypnotherapists as an actual real-life occupation. This is not occultic. This is not wackadoodle land. This is real live, serious job hunting capability recognized by our federal government. All right. HMI is Let me move forward here. HMI is abbreviation for Dr. Kappas's school out in California, Hypnosis Motivation Institute. It has earned the distinction of being America's first hypnotherapy training school to become nationally accredited by an accrediting agency recognized by the U.S. Department of Education in Washington, D.C. Our federal government recognizes hypnotherapy as a valid, valuable, worthwhile endeavor. And you can get a fully accredited degree, if you will, in hypnotherapy. Now, here's something interesting. John Kappas noticed that sometimes he had great effect with patients and at other times he did not. Sometimes he could hypnotize people, other times he could not. If you are someone who was old enough in the 60s and 70s where this was bouncing around in America, you probably saw some of this. Stage hypnotherapists and stuff. All right, we're not dealing with that tonight. That's almost a whole nother world. But you saw this. Certain people could be hypnotized, others could not. All right, and this was a real concern among the hypnotherapy world. Well, Dr. Kappas realized the reason those people who could not be hypnotized wasn't because they could not be hypnotized, but it's because the way the hypnotherapist was communicating to them. Did you follow that? Because I kind of got that a little wordy there. The people that they in the past could not hypnotize is all because they were speaking to those people wrong. Their method of communication was wrong. John Kappas observed that. He changed his communication, and now there is no one he cannot hypnotize, basically speaking. Okay? So, revolutionary change in the theory of hypnosis. All right? He found a way to deal with everyone and to hypnotize everyone. Well, the big push from Kappas's discovery, if you will, he developed this thing, two schools of thought here, physical and emotional suggestibility scale, and also our physical and sexual suggestibility scale. Sorry about that. So let me explain these. Physical and emotional suggestibility scale. All right. Hypnotherapy is all about suggestibility. Suggestibility is all about how you learn and communicate. Okay? That's what we mean by suggestibility. The physical and sexual suggestibility scale has nothing to do with sex in that sense. It's more dealing with your individual personality and behavior as it relates to interpersonal relationships. Whether you're more of a maternal or paternal personality. Are you a little firmer and direct, or are you more soft and gentle? All right. So that's what he's identifying as sexual. It has nothing to do with the act of sex or anything like that. So I don't know how important that is for you guys to understand, so we're not going to dwell on it a whole lot. The real thrust is later. But here's why I included this in our notes. When Kazumi and I were trying to get on the mission field, there was no mission organization that we did not have to do a personality profile test with. All right? Christian organizations. Solid Christian organizations, except BMW or BGFM. There you go. All right. Every one of them does personality profiles. Personality profiles come from John Kappas right here. Psychology has learned from hypnotherapy. Intrigued yet? How widespread is psychology in our world? All right, we're going to come back to this in just a minute. This is the heart of what I want to talk about tonight, and this will take quite a bit of our time. There's something called theory of mind. All right, this is not new. It's been out for a while. And it is, for those of you who enjoy deep philosophical things, go look up Theory of Mind on Wikipedia or Google it, whatever. You'll get some interesting writings, and you'll have more than ample material to read through. This has been out there for quite some time. It goes way, way, way back in philosophy. Back to the beginnings, close to it, of Western philosophy, all right? So this has been around for a while. Descartes is really the guy that launched what we know and understand today as the theory of mind. He was very influential in this. So what we're doing is we're trying to understand how does the mind function? What is this thing that we can't slice our head open and find? Okay? Now, commercial break here. What do we call the heart in the Bible? What are some synonyms? One in particular. Thoughts? Mind. There you go. Our mind, our thoughts, our beliefs. Scripture talks about the mind as the heart of the individual, right? Just let that bounce around as we're looking at this, all right? There is an aspect where we're talking about the heart of man. And this is a theory about the heart. Okay? So what is this little circle thing we got going here? At the top of it, you'll see illustrated the conscious mind. All right? This really only deals with like the last maybe 2 hours of your life. Beyond 2 hours, give or take, stuff starts being removed one way or another from the what they call the conscious mind, okay? You're either, all this input, me standing here, everything that you see, my clothing, my physique, whether you're approval or disapproving of my fashion, my voice, the way it is, the tone, the lighting, actual lights, the paints on the wall, everything that is hitting you right now comes into your conscious mind, and your conscious mind figures out what to do with it. Hang on to it or get rid of it. Okay? So that's our conscious mind. This is where logic, reason, decision, and the will really are critical because they're filtering all of this stuff that's going on, which takes us to the middle portion there called the critical mind. All right? This is our filter. This is where your mind says, I will accept or reject whatever's coming in. Okay? Whatever color you call the paint on the walls here, your critical area says, I either like it or dislike it. If I like it, it goes further into the mind as something I approve. If I dislike it, it goes further into the mind as something I disapprove. Okay? Me. Sound of my voice, the look of my clothes, whatever, everything that comes into the conscious mind will hit the critical mind, the filter. It's what we call it. Hold on to that. You do have both. All right, so we've got the critical mind. Now, you see up there 12% of your mind. I don't know how accurate that is, you know, because we don't have any way really to test that. I think this is their summation. They're just trying to give you an idea of how much is in one area. So I wouldn't go to the bank on, your conscious mind is only 12% of your mind. You might lose money if you take that to the bank. So it's just kind of an idea to direct your thoughts. All right, so we've got the conscious mind. Stuff goes from there into the critical mind, and then you enter into the subconscious mind, okay? Now, I don't know that the term subconscious is the best term, but it's what's out there. It's what has been out there for so long. What you need to understand about subconscious, as we're talking about it tonight, what we're talking about is the learned automatic responses to life. Okay? And that takes up about 88% of your mind. All right? That's the biggest portion of our mind. It is what we call subconscious mind. All right. Let me try to help clarify some of this. Let's say, let me get my illustration here. Let's say as a kid, you always had chocolate cake on your birthday. Okay? Favorite dessert in the world, and your mom always served you chocolate cake on your birthday. All right, you're now 50 years old. We'll just cut it in half there. It's a nice round number. You're 50 years old. You're an adult out on your own. It's your birthday. You're at a restaurant. But you have decided 6 months ago, and you've stuck with it for the last 5 months. It took you 1 month to get acclimated. You're on a diet. No cake. Until you hit that certain weight that you're looking for, okay? Here you are. You're out at a beautiful, wonderful restaurant, among the nicest in town. Food is superb. Your spouse took you there to celebrate your birthday. You finish your meal, and here comes the waiter rolling this cart around, and he stops right dead beside you with the dessert cart so he can serve the people in the next table. And the whole top shelf is right there, just under your nose. And the whole top shelf is filled with nothing but variations of chocolate cake. All right? What do you smell? Chocolate. What do you see? Chocolate. Okay. In your subconscious mind, all those years your mother served you the best chocolate cake in the world. All right, that represents the positives in the subconscious mind, the little plus symbols. With chocolate cake, you have in your subconscious mind positive experiences. All right, so what happened is your conscious mind experienced chocolate cake. It came through your critical mind as a favorable experience, and so it sunk into your subconscious mind. So now, any time that you see or smell chocolate cake, whether it's real or a picture, you automatically, without thought, remember, good old mom, man, her chocolate cake was the best in the world. I sure would like some right now. You don't have to think about mom. You just have a reference to chocolate cake and bam, there your mind goes, right? What about this? As a little kid, your sibling coerced your parents into letting them get a pet. It was a cute, cuddly little puppy dog. But you come in one day and that cute, cuddly little puppy dog doesn't like what you're doing and he just takes a bite right out of your shin. Okay. 20 years later, you walk into somebody's house and they've got a cute, cuddly little puppy dog and he goes, burp. What do you do? Get out, run. Why? Because you have a negative experience and that negative experience was sunk into your subconscious mind, or what I think is more accurate, your learned automatic response system. Okay. Now, both of these will engage in some way, shape, or form the fight or flight mechanism. The little puppy dog, that's definitely hitting your fight or flight. They call that primitive area. Remember, they're evolutionists. They think we evolved, and this theory of mind evolved from the fight or flight, which is the primitive mind. All right, we know that's wrong, but that's the terminology that we have to go with. So what they're saying, the fight or flight mechanism sometimes kicks in and oftentimes does, right? All of that. This is theory of the mind. This is our world's best summation as to what goes on in our mind. Now, I don't want to open up the questions just yet. I'll give you that opportunity. If I do it now, I'll never get to the end. So, at this point, how many of you have red flags or warnings with this description of the mind? Just one. All right, we've been through this. We'll come back to that. I don't really see a tremendous amount here. I mean, can I say it's the gospel truth? No, I can't. But it looks like it makes sense. I mean, I understand what they're saying. Again, take into consideration some of the terminology. Did we evolve to this from our primitive mind? No, of course not. Is there a fight or flight mechanism in the brain? Everything I've seen says there is. I don't have anything to refute it. If you know more medicine, more brain stuff than I do, let me know. I don't necessarily see anything, and we'll get to those who are concerned with it. We'll get there. But personally, I don't see a whole lot that just says, oh, danger, warning, run, this is wrong. All right. That being said, let's move forward a little bit because we are talking about hypnosis tonight. So what are the elements of hypnosis? And stay with me. This will come in. The process of hypnosis is here. First of all, you want to create an overload of message units. So it's the processing of information through daily life. All right. In other words, the hypnotherapist, in order to hypnotize you, he wants to just overload you with information. Just give you more information than you can process. So he's just going to hit you and hit you and hit you with more information. Or if you're a different type of learner, he's going to have you focus and concentrate on one thing, and then he's going to bring in one other element. And so he's not going to be hitting you so fast. He's going to gradually get you focusing. And as your mind is focusing intently on one thing and he's giving you more information, that's how he's overloading you. Because you are focused right here, but he keeps throwing information in at you. And you're like, wait a minute, I got to stay focused here. And oh, I got to process this and that. So first step is to overload your message units coming in. Second step is to disorganize the inhibitory process or to disorganize your critical mind, the filter. They want to give you so much information that you're disorganized. And when that becomes disorganized, that will trigger your fight or flight mechanism, and that leads you into what they call the hypersuggestible state. You got so much information coming in, the critical mind can't filter through it all fast enough, and it starts breaking down, and that's where they get a doorway into your subconscious mind. That's when you're in the hypnotic state. And the fifth point there is, at that point, they have access to your subconscious mind. All right, notice the little quote down here at the bottom. Our tools are our words. Therefore, how we communicate is important. We'll come back to this. I think most pastors would say that's pretty important aspect of their ministry as well. Our tools are our words. So how we communicate with people is important. As a believer, we have to agree the same statement. Different context, all right? I'm not promoting hypnosis, so keep that in mind. But the statement, all right? The statement, just take it for what it is. All right, the next process in the hypnotic session leads us to communications, and there are three parts to communication. There are words, there are nonverbal content, and there's the state of mind of the receiver. Okay, what I'm saying, my body language, and the state that you're in, a full belly and a warm room with some guy speaking. Great for a nap, right? So we got to keep all these things in mind. Communication, all of this comes into play. We have to consider it. If one and two are not consistent with each other, then the recipient must infer the meaning of message. Words plus nonverbals. You have to infer. It's not directly stated. And we're going to come back to that in just a second. Inferring here means one of the learning styles. So that's the suggestibility state. So at this point, I want to back up, and we're getting close to unleashing you guys with questions and why we're talking about this in a Bible study. Coming back to the physical and emotional suggestibility scale, all right? That's critical here because it tells the hypnotherapist how you learn. And once he knows how you learn, he knows how to communicate with you to put you in the hypnotic state, all right? physical suggestible or emotional suggestible. These are the two ways of suggestibility, the two broad types of learning styles. And that's not on my PowerPoint. So the physical suggestible is this: somebody who learns literally. If you're an emotional suggestible person, you learn by inference. Let me try to clarify that. A physical suggestible person or someone who learns literally is someone who takes the words at face value, literally interpreting what you say. How many of you are familiar with the TV show Cheers? Okay, you remember Woody at the bar? Woody took everything literally, right? But all his friends were talking to him with inference. They're inferring a meaning. They're not coming out and directly saying it. And so Woody would take everything literal, and that was the humor. That was the comedy of the show, or at least with Woody's character. Here's another example. Last night when we finished counseling in here, I was putting things back and organizing. Here's inference. I stand here tonight in front of a group of people who sit in this room and who bring in drinks from dinner, who come in here on Sunday for Sunday school and bring in drinks, all right? And I say in our gathering tonight, last night as I was straightening up in here, I noticed that there was a large number of cups all around the floor. Does anybody infer a meaning from that that I did not specifically state? What is the meaning? Pick up your cups, right? All right. You people are the emotional learning style people, all right? You learn from inference. Now, that might be just too easy, but that's the point. I don't have to say, hey, people, pick up your cups on your way out. That's literal. I have to literally say it, word for word, what I'm trying to communicate. That's a physical suggestibility, okay? Make sense? Well, not really. Okay. How about this one? Your wife yells at you from the other room, "Did you turn down the thermostat?" The husband responds, "I didn't touch it." Okay. What happened? He inferred, he inferred a meaning in her question, right? Uh-oh, I'm in trouble. She thinks I did something wrong. That's what he heard. What she was saying was, "Did you turn down the thermostat? If not, I'll do it. I'm standing right here at it." See the difference? You see what kind of problem it makes when you have different learning styles and communication styles? That could have been a massive argument, right? Okay, let's try to bring this a little more into why I'm talking about this and why Gary suggested I go through this with you guys. Yes, all the cups. It's not enough that you put lids on your cups. You have to throw them in the trash when you're done. All right. In our world today, hypnosis and aspects of it, they are infiltrating our entire society, and they're coming in through the medical world. Again, the dentist offices. More and more dentists are advertising the use of hypnosis as a means to help you get through the discomfort that is associated with the dental work that you have to go through. Hospitals, doctors, emergency rooms, so on and so forth, are starting to turn to aspects of hypnosis to help you deal with pain management. Hypnosis is available in many medical hospitals and doctors' offices for childbirth. It can hypnotize you, women, so that you don't feel as much pain and you can have a natural childbirth without the use of heavy drugs. They can use hypnosis to treat your fears. When they are testing you for something and all the tests come back negative, there's nothing wrong, Okay, let's turn to some other alternative use. If you've got pain somewhere and they say, we've run every test, every x-ray, every gamma ray, every MRI, PRI, ARY, BRY, CRY that we can think of, and nothing shows a problem, maybe you should go to a psychologist or hypnosis. It's becoming more and more prevalent. They're not always using the word hypnosis. For example, some of you have already run into this. Visualization techniques come straight out of hypnosis. It's used to treat anxiety, panic attacks, pain management as well. Visualize yourself receiving a shot from a needle and feeling nothing. All right? What about in schools? What about sports? You got to visualize yourself crossing that finish line. If you can see it, you can do it. Let's go. Oh, we're the greatest. Right? It's hitting us in all areas. Guidance counselors, psychologists at schools, psychiatrists at schools, or dealing specifically with certain schools. You have things called age regression therapy. What is that? Hypnosis. Different name. You have treatments for ADD, ADHD, treatment for fears, phobias of all sorts, treatments for test anxiety. Go get hypnotized and you won't have these problems. Hypnosis is the cure. Attachment disorder in small children's, OCD, on and on and on it goes. Pull out the DSM-5 and so much that is in there, the diagnostic manual from psychology, so much of it in there, you will find some way, somehow, hypnosis can help treat that. Okay? It's infiltrating our society. We've got to think about it. Here is the problem, and here's what concerns me. No longer is hypnosis this weird, wacky dude on the stage swinging a pocket watch, telling people in the audience to quack like a duck, things like this. This is science, folks, and it's been around for ages. So-called science. The problem, and the reason way back at the beginning that I said out of the occult into quote-unquote science, is because this is viewed as science thanks to psychology. Psychology is viewed by many as a science. The problem is it's not true science. True science deals with things that you can objectively observe and test. I cannot objectively say that Dan is depressed. Dan says he's depressed. Okay, Dan's depressed. Where's the objective evidence? My ARI, BRY, CRY, all the way to ZRY shows no problem. But Dan says, I don't feel good. I feel sad. You're depressed. Dan is the so-called source of authority and the objective determiner. So I give Dan a pill. He comes in the next week. I'm not sad no more. He's not anything. He's just numb. All right? What's the objective standard there? Dan is, but Dan's the one who's saying whether Dan is good or bad. How can I test that? I can't know if Dan really is good or bad, happy or sad. I have to take his word for it. That's not science. That's philosophy. Hypnosis has launched itself into the so-called scientific world, and it is scientific, and that's why all the way to our federal government, it has been embraced as a valid, a good job, a good career, a good methodology for treatment of problems in life. So here's my question. Let's stir the thoughts and get the questions going. You look at this. What's the hypnotherapist trying to do? He's trying to get down into the subconscious mind, right? He's trying to implant an idea, a thought, some statement into your subconscious mind so that it determines your behavior automatically. You don't have to think about it. I want to quit smoking. So the hypnotherapist is going to put in your subconscious mind, you do not want to smoke anymore. And that way, when you get back to the office and the stress goes up and you're like, man, normally I would be smoking like a freight train. Have two in each hand and one in my foot. You have no urge to smoke, right? Because he's implanted that in your subconscious mind, you do not want to smoke now. You got the easier way out, right? The pastor, what is the pastor trying to do? He's trying to get a statement into your subconscious mind so that it drives your behavior, your thought life. Are we not? Thou shalt not lie. Do I not want that so sunk into you that it's automatic? You don't have to stop and think, what are the Ten Commandments? What's this one here? Oh, thou shalt not lie. Okay, I can't answer the way I want to. No, it's automatic. I'm thinking of telling a lie. I can't do that. No, here's the truth. We want it there so that it's automatic. Here's the danger. There's a difference. We're talking about the truth of God. The hypnotherapist is talking about whatever. There is a difference. But do you see the subtlety that's going on here? This is science. What's wrong with trying to get something into your subconscious mind so that you can live a good, more healthy, more beneficial life? Questions, comments? Okay. Freeze. So we can add that on there. I'll put that up there. Fight, flight, or freeze. So here it is. Theory of mind. What do you guys think about this? Some of you had concerns with this. I'm done. You guys speak.
Is there a distinction between things that you might have going on in your world, which would be, let's say, sinful, versus things that for instance, if I go to the dentist to get the crown put on, and I'm fearful of the dentist or something, or it just hurts, and they might be able to put on some lonely music or whatever that is, I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, is that wrong? Versus maybe somebody who clearly has an anger problem, which is sin, and we're trying to control the mind. Is there a difference?
Okay, the difference, and I think with what you said, we have to clarify, it's not just a specific music we listen to. It is a trained individual coming to you, putting you in a state where your critical area of the mind is having gaps. It's overloaded, and so they get a breakthrough. And with that breakthrough, they can implant the suggestions they want, okay? Now, to make this a little more confusing, not intentionally, but standard hypnosis, they will tell you, we cannot make you do what you do not want to do. All right? So that clouds the issue. The hypnotherapist, if you want to quit smoking, I can help you to quit smoking. If you don't truly want to quit smoking, I can't make you quit smoking. That's what they'll say. So it clouds things. But it's not just going to the dentist and saying, hey, put on some Beethoven or some Bach, you know, while you grind on my teeth and make all these shrill sounds and stuff. It is somebody coming in and breaking down the critical function of your mind and putting a suggestion in your learned response system that is, I don't mind those sounds and feelings of a dentist drilling on my teeth. Doesn't bother me. And so you go into the dentist office and you sit down, drill away, doc. So that's the process. I don't know who was first.
Does this process make you more susceptible in the future to the same type of thing?
There is a little bit of a concern there. They have to, according to them, they have to bring you out of the hypnotic state. Otherwise, you remain in a hyper-suggestible state. So they have to bring you out of this state. Now, later in the future, they're going to try to make it so that they can rehypnotize you a little easier than the first time. Okay? It's called an induction to rehypnosis.
I better trust the person that I'm letting do this implicitly.
Well, I would say even before you get to the point of trusting the hypnotherapist, is hypnotherapy itself acceptable from a biblical standpoint? I think that's what we have to deal with. And what I'm not seeing any of the thinkers and discerners doing on the subject of hypnosis is dealing with this right here, because hypnotherapists, again, they got science backing them now for what they're doing. Mike.
Okay, here's my philosophical. You already know basic. Okay, this is the world's way of describing how you're not.
Yeah.
And so my perspective is that the Bible very clearly describes the heart, the mind, the soul. I believe it's sufficient to explain all that. You do a one of the best hearts out there. There is out there for anybody to get.
Right.
If I was going to try to teach somebody about their mind and the way they think, instead of having that diagram out there, I would take your heart diagram, which you created, and I would explain the same processes of thinking through your life. And I would use the biblical heart diagram do it with, instead of that man-made created thing. I'm not saying that there isn't some logic in that diagram.
Right.
There are some things that make sense in that diagram. But if God wanted us to have that diagram, he wouldn't give us all the scriptures. I mean, there's hundreds of passages of scripture that talk about the heart, the soul, the mind, mm-hmm. the whole decision-making process, and it's really clear that.
Okay, Dennis.
You've been through the training. Do you think this actually works?
Does it actually work?
Can you access the subconscious mind and plan something? And is this real?
And again, here's where science comes in. There's no way to absolutely objectively know it. What we can do is say, Billy came into a hypnotherapist smoking like a freight train. And after one or two sessions with a hypnotherapist, he has no desire to smoke. All right, and there's documented cases, all kinds of stuff like that. People solving anger problems, communication problems, habitual things like biting their nails, smoking cigarettes, alcoholism, so on and so forth. All this stuff is out there. Age regression therapy, where you're going back, dealing with memories of the past. And again, there's so much danger in that, but so much is out there where there has been a quote-unquote success as the individual defines success. I quit smoking.
So we've observed some behavior changes using this to explain that. But there's no real way to say this is what caused the behavior changes. There's no science that you say.
There's
just a mechanism how it works. This is just yeah. what we are using to explain.
It's all more subjective. Is this what made Billy quit smoking? Well, looking at it, it seems that way. But again, we didn't put Billy in a petri dish and put something in there and watch it grow, so that we've got objective factual data. So, Carla. Yeah, but it's not, keep in mind, and this is kind of their, I think it's a safeguard for them. They can't make you do what you don't want to do.
This is not making
suggestions. Yes, that's still.
The other thing I want to ask is there proof of detriment to people who have been injured?
There's not enough study out there yet. People haven't been following through documenting this, so they haven't gone to whoever I said, Billy or whoever, who just quit smoking. They haven't traced Billy 5, 10, 20, 15, however many years later to see what's going on as a result of you being hypnotized. Those type case studies aren't there. That was Tim.
You know, the simple things like biting your nose and then like the hard things, you know, like big fear or something. It, this whole hypnotized thing, someone's like, you don't need to trust God. You know, you just, you're putting your trust in, you know, this guy to make you better, and, you know, meets, you know, God now because I got this.
Right. See, for me, Tim, you hit the nail on the head, because this process here, hypnosis, it totally does away with the doctrine of perseverance, the doctrine of trials in the life of anyone. God has a purpose, and we're totally ignoring that. Caleb? I stole your thunder. Yeah. Yeah. There is. We've had an answer for a long time, and this is relatively new on the scene. So, Karen. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, as we look at Scripture, God comes to us, He reveals Himself to us, and He says, accept me. I am God. Believe me, and here is evidence. Look back through the Old Testament. We have evidence of who God is, how He interacts. That's how we are to accept God and put His truth into our subconscious mind. It is a willful choice. It's not a shortcut, a secret, whatever, that we have to wait for the occult to learn some kind of scientific thing to justify their shortcut method. All right, there is no shortcut. What if it is just smoking that I'm trying to kick? And I go to the hypnotherapist and I kick smoking. Why was that a struggle in my life? Because I can tell you a number of people that they said, I'm done with it and it's over. They didn't struggle. Why do I struggle with it? Alcoholism, why do I struggle with it and other people don't? Cocaine, why do I struggle and other people don't? On and on and on we go. Why is it? Because God is molding each one of us uniquely. And God has a purpose for that trial being in my life. And the purpose is in the end of it for me to be like Jesus Christ. But I just found a shortcut method, quote unquote.
Just want to be careful that we don't fall off a cliff here. Because some people, especially people who believe in faith, would take what you just said and say, you've got cancer. Just pray.
Yeah.
If you have a headache, don't take Tylenol.
Right.
And I don't think you're saying that. I just want to be clear that that's a danger of taking some of
the
statements too far.
Yes. So we have to pull back. Why did God give us doctors and people who understand the human body? There's a reason. We live in a sin-cursed world, and what's the result of that? We're dying. And He's trying to be merciful and ease our dying experience by giving us men and women who look at and study and understand all these things and say, hey, you got this problem, we can help you out. So, yeah, we can't go too far. I'm going to move on because we're out of time, and I'm known for always going over, and the nursery people are going to get irate with me if I don't move on. So, this is a topic that there's lots of questions, there's lots of concerns, and there's lots of unknowns. And it's something that I believe we need the thinkers and the discerners in the church to look into afresh and anew. Because, again, everything I look at that criticizes hypnosis just jumps to the occult, says it's out of the occult, and just spends hundreds of pages talking about stuff like that, and they don't really deal with the issue. But hypnosis, hypnotherapy, whatever you want to call it, it now has a scientific element to it, and we've got to evaluate this from a biblical standpoint. Is this theory of mind, which has been out there long before hypnosis, is this accurate? Is it biblical? And we need people that are better thinkers than me to come in and clarify these things. So it's out there. It's just something to raise your attention to, and you're probably going to have more questions than anything, like I do at this point.